Hey, how's it going, man?
Are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, you're a little weird, but other than that, is there anything we haven't dealt with before when we do these?
Nope, nothing new.
So whatever you're doing is perfect right now.
I'm trying to lean on my phone against a solo cup. Oh, it worked. Is it going to stay? It fell over.
Oh, you need to put a bourbon in it.
The bourbon's in the Yeti. I don't put a bourbon in a solo cup. You got to put it in a Yeti.
Hey, man. I was giving you ideas.
Eventually.
I do.
We are getting
fired. I do put mine in a Yeti. So I got a big 30-ouncer, too, so that makes the drink extra nice. That's why I would tell Crystal that I already had three drinks. I'm not lying to her.
Yeah.
They just so happen to be extra stiff.
I rock the Yeti Lowballs for all mine. It's good for four fingers of whiskey or a scoop of ice cream, they say on the package.
Well, fair enough. You getting everything ready?
Yeah, we're ready to go whenever you are.
Wow, I am, dude. I'm just banding calls right now, so I got about 8 more to do. I'll get those out tomorrow and get these to the engraver and hopefully get them back just in time for Hattiesburg.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, you may hear me cussing if I put a band on wrong.
Okay, that's fine. Hey, man, let's get this going.
All right, let's do it.
Welcome back, everyone, to another Red Lake Talk with the man, Chris Wright. What's going on, man?
Man, life is good. Nate, my guy, how are you doing?
Not bad. Well rested, surprisingly, considering I'm
two
weeks into a newborn.
That's right. You just had another little one.
Yeah, man, it's going really well. We're waiting on one little thing to come back to make sure everything's good to go, and we'll skipping right on down the road to hopefully continuing this trend of sleeping at night and awake during the day.
Nice. All right, you guys are always in our prayers. Remember that. So, and I was happy to hear mom and baby are doing well. So,
yep. Yeah, we're doing really well.
Yeah. So, have you gotten out to do any hunting or anything, man?
Yeah, I've done. I actually got to hunt a bunch there. First part of season being the fact that I had a kid 4 days before season come in. I think I hunted of the first 10, I think I hunted 7 days. I went out 7 days. We'll say that. Poor choices or trying to do stuff different. I don't know which one is the correct answer to that. Because, as a waterfowler, weather tends to lean one way or the other. But
yeah,
I tell everyone, water is king here because of where we're located and the fact that we have big rivers all around us.
Honestly, I think the small water by you guys is what's insane.
Yeah, if you can get small water to work, it is amazing. And that's where, made a mistake opening day. Probably should have went small water. Granted, it was negative 20, so small water was not something we were leaning towards wanting to do. But I think that would have been the right decision. We tried a field. It didn't work. We did get a couple looks, but birds were more in a panic trying to figure out the water situation with it being that cold.
Yeah. It gets that cold. I always shoot for afternoon hunts if I'm going to do a field. If they've got an established water source, I have found going out early in the morning for a field hunt could be folly. In most cases, you know, it depends on where you're at. Up here in Ohio, man, I have no issues going out at like 10:30 in the morning, setting up, and it just seems like we always have a really good flight hitting fields, you know, between like 12 o'clock and 2. So.
Yeah, that's I've had very good success here, kind of more towards the back half here, a little later in the morning and stuff. I've definitely decided to alter my spread as far as my rigging and a lot of stuff here as of recent here, as we get ready to hit like the home stretch of the last 4 weeks here, which I don't know if that's a good time to start trying to change everything or not, but we'll see if it pays off.
Yeah. What do you consider doing?
So I'm dropping, really all my geese floaters already had, 18 plus rigs on them, and I'm just going to switch them over to the Lifetime rigs just because I kind of like that cable a lot better. It's very stiff. It's when it's super cold outside, I like the cable, and I make my own J weights and I use my own type of connection system on them. So I wanted to redo all those. And then I'm actually going to go ahead and rig a set of what used to be my Arkansas ducks, a bag of just 4-footers. I'm going to rig them over to the 20 because we did find a little bit of success one day on a real deep, deep bank. It was just a low spot, and the issue was we had decoys so tight that it didn't work as far as where the birds would set down and how they could set down in the decoys. They ended up pushing out to 50, 60 yards, setting down in the middle of the river, and then they just get up and leave. But, you know, if we could push those decoys out and push ourselves right down to the edge, tight on the edge of the water, you know, feet in the water, real tight there, I think we can take those shots at 25 yards and make them work. It's definitely a learning curve for me because I'm not used to that kind of hunting, which I know you don't. I don't know, you do a little bit of deep water hunting when you come down this way.
Yeah, actually, one of my leases we have about 15 feet of the bank that's about 3 feet, and it goes from 3 feet to 21. And it does it real quick. It's not gradual. It's just straight. It drops down. So we have rigs for the short water. So, and then we also have rigs for the deep water. So, and all the ducks we actually put in the short water. So, and then we'll stretch our geese out as far as 60 yards out. So. And make a nice bowl. One of the tricks we also have too is we run a ton of goose decoys. So it's nothing to come to our spread and see anywhere between 100 to 130, 140 goose floaters. So that grabs everything's attention that comes down that river. That is not a typical river spread. So
no, and that's where
usually we get a little bit more action.
No, and that's what I'm pushing towards, just having that bigger spread and stuff. And that's what I'm trying to, some of the guys I hunt with, and we're all on that board, and they actually have longer duck rigs just because they've been pushing kind of duck rigs out for a while, and I've always tried to either backwater it or tight creeks or way up the creeks. I've not been, because it just seems like if you river can be so hit or, like, not hit or miss, but where the bird's decoy is so annoying because they'll be setting down and then just peel out to 40 yards for no reason at all.
A lot of it has to do with presentation of your decoy spread, what the birds are doing, whether they're fresh birds or not, whether they're feeding together. I mean, there's a lot of different things that I look at before we start setting a spread. It always starts with a really good scouting mission. You got to remember, I got 3 leases down on the river, and we don't touch the fields. So we let the fields just be feeds, and we hunt the water right in front of the fields. So we have a constant source of food for these birds where they're not getting pounded on or beat on. So we've always had big success as far as that goes. The biggest thing is just finding that feed and then just kind of watching what them birds are doing.
Yeah, and I think you guys kind of set a loaf spread, as I would call it. Like it's a loaf. It's kind of a loaf view. It's kind of a relax, where I think we're more only trying to push a creek or set them down somewhere where, I don't know, Yeah, birds sit down at the creek mouths and stuff, but they don't sit down like they do just random spots on the bank. If you know what I'm saying, a lot of guys who hunt big water understand that big rivers, they'll just be birds set in spots for no reason at all. And they'll feed in ridiculous spots. I found them feeding in, I mean, it had about a four foot spot where they could legit feed. And then after that, it was like a 10 foot drop off. And I mean, to me, they had no rhyme or reason really to be in there feeding. It just kind of a couple birds set in there and then it just grew.
Yeah, a lot of it has to do with them being comfortable, them finding safety. So, and who knows, you know, what birds were thinking. You know, probably the biggest thing is once you find them, watch what they're doing. So, you know, I've got a creek up here, and you've been to it, and it was a fluke thing that I even found it. And, man, we can hammer that thing nonstop. Doesn't matter what the weather is. It's always got solid birds coming in, and a lot of it had to do with a freshwater spring pushing into it. All those nutrients in the water. So, and the ripples. So the ripples is what really does it as well too when it's super cold, because that won't freeze. That big freeze we had, ripples were wide open. So, and there was probably 200-300 ducks sitting on that creek, just sitting along the ice and taking turns jumping in and out of the stinking water. It was almost crazy.
Yeah, there were definitely spots that I think a lot of people, I mean, some people did find them, which granted, that was the thing that there were some people that had some strong success, and those guys, I mean, we don't have a goose migration yet, which is kind of completely opposite. At this time, normally we're hunting geese with ducks. Right now we're hunting ducks and just like kind of hoping we see local geese. And I mean, I think tonight on our scout drive, we seen a group of 100 geese sitting on a pond, local birds. There's 200 sitting in town in one spot, about 150 on the other side of town. And then we found 150 plus sitting on a place that is basically like a reservoir. It's a pond that no one can hunt, that they just know they can go there and relax. And I mean, those are all local birds that are just like congregated together. It's not migrators. They might be some migrators next in, but I mean, they're not going out to feeds. They're kind of just sitting in these areas, maybe doing some slight feeding and stuff, and that's about it.
Well, I mean, the weather's definitely changed. We saw that just in a matter of a couple days with, you know, how we were hunting. We went from, you know, us being super thin to all of a sudden us having some birds, and then the phone calls going out that one of our big roost areas all of a sudden went to 3,000-4,000 birds. So, and then the next phone call I got was the next day. I was actually at school working with one of my competition teams, and I had three buddies call me up. They're like, dude, you got a massive feed. I'm like, wait, what? So, and it was, hey man, we want to hunt this. I'm like, all right, well, give me a few. So, and we ended up setting up, and we started the hunt at 2:00 and we're done at 3:30. So it was just one of those things, and we managed to hit that field twice. We hunted it right. We got out of there. We didn't shoot into the monster flocks. So the next day we went and hunted another field. So we just played the wind. And it delivered. So, and ironic, Chris is one of our buddies, is actually, he had a Christmas thing going on. So he hits me with a, hey, I'm not going to go. I'm just going to go scout in the morning. And there was birds back in that field we had ground. So, but then the weather just started getting progressively nicer and nicer, and days started getting warmer, and all of a sudden that roost started disappearing. As all the small water opened up, all the ponds opened up, all the lakes opened up, birds started to spread back out again. So that kind of changed my mentality from looking for the big feeds and looking for the big roosts to, all right, they're back on the small water now. The ducks don't need the geese, so they're going to separate themselves. And we found that to be the case. So we started hunting some smaller stuff. And, you know, I got a pond that you'd see it and be like, no, we're not going to kill anything here. So, and I'm in there with two buddies, and I'm telling them not to shoot in flocks of 150 ducks coming in. So I'm like, it's just too many. So let's go ahead and let them go. So yeah, we hunted it smart. So, but that's what I'm seeing is it's where the feeds have disappeared because of the weather. Birds are separating. They don't need to be together on those same roosts. The ducks right now don't need the geese. I'm finding, you know, small groups, you know, here's 10, here's a dozen, here's 20. And they're just sitting in little ponds that popped up because of all the rain we got. I mean, for Pete's sakes, it was 60 stinking degrees today. So fourth day of January, 60 degrees. And I mean, on my way to go out and scout two of my fields in a pond, I must have passed 100 ducks in 10 different fields. They were just all spread out.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of our scout right now is birds have spread back out. You're not seeing your big groups. You're seeing your smaller groups. And I've started noticing the trend of our birds have kind of went stale. We're seeing some spinner issues on water and stuff where they're just not having it. They break down, and we had a flock. I didn't go Monday morning there, New Year's Eve, right off the rip. My buddies and stuff all got to go, and they got to go set up in the spot. And I've been texting back and forth. My son actually woke up at 4 o'clock. So, my older son. So I kind of laid in bed with him, hung out, kind of gave mom a little bit of a break so she could sleep, and then kind of caught up with them a little later in the morning. And I think they had an opportunity quick and early that they kind of, you know, we've been struggling early morning. I told him, I was like, hey man, the small water's open back up. Birds are going to look. And they kind of had a group look right off the rip, and they kind of weren't prepared, and you know, they didn't shoot. They just kind of let them go. You know, if you get caught off guard, you know, right now, it's better to let them go than, you know, cause an uproar of 15 birds. And they had a black duck by the time I got there, which we've been shooting a lot of blacks. And I think I watched one flock when I got there, and we kind of hit them as they were going past us, you know, out on the river, and they kind of broke down instantly. I've never seen a group kind of break down like this on the water where, you know, they went from a group of 15, 20 to singles, pairs, triples, fives, you know what I mean? Like it just like they fell apart and
they spread out
every, they worked right in. And as soon as they kind of got over the hole and I think that they might've had a glance, but as soon as they seen spinners, man, they kind of just, they didn't flare, but they just were gone. They didn't circle again. They kind of just left. And I was like, hey, we need to pull these spinners. And they're like, you think that's this year? And I was like, hey, like, I mean, let's try it. I mean, that they broke down way too fast to like end in just like leaving. Like, I was like, either they seen us really, really bad. And I was like, I don't think that was the case because they didn't get in tight enough to see us, but they could definitely see the two spinners running. And unfortunately, you know, you never see another group, so you don't know if that was the right decision or not, but I do believe it was.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, man. I got a rule, unless I have rain, I pull spinners at 8.
Yeah, and I think that's where we're
at. Sure. I use them dead nuts in the morning for the first groups to come in, and once 8 o'clock hits, I go ahead and pull them.
Yeah.
So if I want motion, I'll use jerk rigs or I'll kick water or, you know, there's some bubblers out there that work really well. So, yeah, we pull them. Yeah. Now, if you got rain or snow, I still use the spinners. You know, we also use a good old-fashioned whirligig. It's just it's a real pain in the butt to get it out. But right now my focus is just huntable flocks of birds.
Yeah.
You know, because I can take 2-3 buddies in. I got some guys that can shoot. You know, and I'm seeing, you know, 30, 40 ducks sitting on a hole. Those are huntable birds. You know, we're going to give it a go.
Yeah, we checked out. We found about 20 to 30 sitting a night on a water hole that we're going to give a try. I'm actually going to scout it in the morning, and we're going to give it a try. Probably Friday morning, I think I'm going to take off work for a little while, and we're going to give it a try and see what happens. I think they're the only concern is when are they getting there. So I think we're going to try to get a scout on it in the morning, make sure they're coming in the morning, and make sure the water holds.
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to go 2 days without water before we get in there. But yeah, it's definitely a very impressive thing when you can break them down on that small water in a field. They're fun.
Yeah. Love it. So that's the plan for this weekend. I got two spots. Both are holding water. There's signs that birds are in there. I showed up this afternoon to give it a quick scout. You know, we had a real wicked wind. This one spot I went to, we actually, and I can't make this up. This is how crazy our weather is. So we went in there Monday, and originally when we scouted it Sunday, it still had ice on the pond. So, and we just kind of went out to see if birds were moving back into this main roost area. And we had three flights of birds come over top of us, anywhere between, you know, 15 and 20. And they worked over the pond like three or four times. We were just looking, and then they headed back to the marsh. And I'm like, all right, we got some huntable birds here. We're going to come in, you know, we'll brush some ice. So we'll throw in some floaters. We're going to throw some skinnies out in the field. So, and we're just going to, we're going to give it all she's got till about noon. So we should get into something. And just what a day makes is just amazing, because we went from having those three groups come over between 7 o'clock and 8 o'clock to our first group on Monday morning was about 20 birds. So, and we scratched, unfortunately, due to something not shooting straight, I'm not giving any names, but, yeah, we ended up scratching four. So it started off well. The next group that came in was 150 birds. And I'm just like, all right, we're not going to shoot. So we had birds landing all over the place. We had them landing in the skinnies, landing in the water. They were sitting on the ice. So they hung out for about 20 minutes and just kind of skedaddled. You know, it was cool to see, but I was just like, it's just way too, you know, last day of the season. Last weekend of the season, absolutely. We're just going to give it. But we still have a month left. You know, and I looked at my weather for next week, and next week is just, I mean, we're 40s and 50s with sun. So I'm like, it's an opportunity for us to, you know, if we hunt this thing smart, we can hit it two or three more times here in the next month and do really well. So, but yeah, we had that that same ongoing problem. I didn't realize how many birds had moved back into that marsh. So, and then when we actually started investigating, we can actually see the ice. We started noticing footprints and bird crap all over the ice. So they had been sitting on that ice trying to thaw it out. Now, this was Monday. I went there today. And I'm not joking. As we're breaking ice, we had 4-inch chunks. That's how thick that ice was. So two solid days of rain and these goofy temperatures, that ice is gone. So when I went in there today, you know, we got a wind at 20 miles an hour. It's an east-west pond, and it's a solid west wind. And so I just went over the east side of the pond, and it's just loaded with feathers. So now I can't tell you if it's, you know, a few birds or if it's, you know, 70, 80, 90 birds going in there. So then I went and checked my other spot because they were joining, and I'm finding footprints. So we're going to make a go at one on Saturday because we've got a little weather coming in. So we're going to hit the field because it's a green field. And Sunday, we're just kind of overcast. So we're going to go hit that pond on Sunday. So, but yeah, it's just right now they've moved to that small water. The big roosts are disappearing. You know, one of my biggest roosts, I think there's only like 1,000 birds sitting on it right now. And they're using the spot we can't hunt. So those are the locals.
Yeah, and the worst part about this, when those migrators get grouped up with those locals, they quickly learn those safe places. And I mean, it's it's a good and bad thing, because eventually they will break out away from there and become huntable. But it's one of those where it's like, ah, are they ever going to break out there?
Yeah, for me, it just comes down to weather, man. If we have one of those days where it's like raining and spitting and snowy, man, them birds just want to get to a feed. And that's where I'll set out some numbers. Now, if we have, you know, kind of these overcast days where you're just kind of, you're fighting with the weather, you don't know what's going to happen. So that's where it seems those days, at least in my opinion, where it becomes a heck of a lot tougher to try to hunt those birds that know where they want to go.
Yeah. So let's break down here to get a little technical. Let's break down. I can go first. You can go first. Your current, like, what your field current look is if you're going to go for, like, a medium to big spread. What are you throwing at
me?
Yeah.
All right. Well, depending on the field, so we'll just say it's corn. What I try to do is I size it up to what's actually going in there. So if I have anywhere between 400 and 500 birds going in there, I'm setting up 100 to 150. If I'm running skinnies, I just run straight skinnies. I'll go out and put 15 dozen skinnies. So, now if I'm running full bodies, like I can physically get a trailer out into the field, I'll run 120 full bodies. So, probably the biggest thing we do is make sure, number one, we're on the X. So, and we'll actually change, you know, once we find the X, we'll base it off the wind. What's the wind doing? So, and then the next thing we're going to do is, you know, if you got a lot of birds laying down, we're going to put down shells. So we had that for a bit of time where birds were landing in bean fields. They weren't landing in the cornfields, and you were seeing them sitting down trying to thaw out the ground. So I want to mimic that as much as humanly possible. So I'm a firm believer in sticking those big bowls that everyone likes to use in the places where I don't want birds to land. So those are my aggressive fighters. I don't want them anywhere near my kill hole. So some guys will argue and say something different, but for me, I put them where I don't want birds to land. So usually I'm setting the blinds up, you know, kind of in the center of a kill hole. So I've got good decoy coverage behind me. I've got good decoy coverage in front of me. So if I got ducks going in there, I like to make a patch with ducks. So, but I also have a tendency of taking, you know, I'll take 4 or 5 ducks and put it right next to a feeder. You know, some guys get a little weirded out by that, but, you know, for me, the ducks are there because the geese are helping them get to the feed. So, you know, and depending on, you know, a lot of guys run spinners. So I'm I love running a vortex machine. I really do. So that is an absolute game changer. You know, I got a couple that we actually made here, and we'll just use those with some wind ducks on them. You know, and the moment the geese start flying, what we do is we'll just go ahead and we just detach them from the battery and just hide the birds in the decoy spread. So, yeah, that's kind of what I do, man. So, you know, and if I got a goofy wind or if I lack good corn coverage, we'll cross shoot them.
Okay.
So, what about you?
So this year I'm kind of in the mix of making a small change to it, but like I like running about 10 dozen geese and 5 dozen duck skinnies. And I love running them. I got 3 spinners that I love to run, and the guys I hunt with have 4 more at least. We run lucky ducks, so we can throw them all on the same frequency, and you know, 2 of us have remotes, we can shut them down at any time. I like running them low to the ground if I'm in a field. I might run 1, like 2 stakes up, 3 stakes up, but I really like keeping them low just for that flash. Something that I have added that sadly is not going to make it here for this weekend, but I have added 5 dozen socks. 5 dozen.
Who'd you get them from?
I went dive bomb socks just for kind of like, I like the breakdown a little bit better of them. And, well, more of the reason I went with them is I have also – I'm seeing more bean fields. I don't know what you're seeing up there, but I'm seeing more and more bean fields in West Virginia that we can get permission on and hunt. Or our farmers in the corn, they're basically scraping it. I mean, they're like chopping it, baling it, and it's gone. There's nothing left. So you really don't have much of a hide. So I also went and picked up this year, and it works. And I'll break down how it works right in a few. But I went and picked up from Dye Bomb the tall 36-inch socks. I picked up Snows and Canadians. And the reason why I picked up Snows was the biggest thing when you're in layouts is, like, it's hard. I understand because, like, it's hard to get guys not to look because you've got to kind of, like, as a hunter, you've kind of got to figure out, you know, where are the birds? If you got a guy who's communicating down the line, a good like quarterback, I like to call a guy, like if you got him in the middle where he can talk to everyone and he's saying like, hey, we got a group working here on the right, they're coming in, low right, you're fine. But you know what I mean? You get those situations where no one talks. So I like to run my Snows, you know, the head of the group, kind of up at the top of the head of everybody to kind of keep that white flash in there for people's faces. Then I like running my Canadians, just like spreading them down the bodies, down out into what I would consider my kill hole. And man, those tall socks definitely keep you hid. And the reason why I know that is I about caught a mallard in goose season in December. Like I was like sitting up trying to put my camera together, and the next thing I know, I hear someone go ducks, and I look up and there's a drake backpedaling, trying to set down basically in amongst the tall socks, which was in my blind with me with my head up. So I quickly duck my head down around, and like the guy beside me goes, "Did that duck hit you?" I was like, "No, but I could have caught him. Like I literally could have reached up and grabbed him and pulled him down into my blind with me." It was the closest I've ever had a duck really get to me. I've had it one other time, but we had a really good hide. So I don't really like, I mean, this was like, we didn't have a great hide, but it worked. We was able to hide using those tall socks. I mean, it's definitely just a little, we're probably going to have to use them this weekend because where we're finding the duck sitting in the water, everything around it pretty much is short. I mean, that's kind of what I'm running this year. My only issue, I love tangle-free stuff. I have all tangle-free skinnies, bags, ducks, floaters, all of them are tangle-free. But my only issue with tangle-free socks are they run a 3D head. I just feel like that's useless. I wish they'd put a two-dimensional head on their socks. And I don't know if it's kind of probably a copyright thing, the reason why they can't yet or something. I don't know. But you know what I mean? Like, you're at the point with a sock, like, I really don't care about the head. I don't need a 3D head in my way for packing up. I will say...
No, I get you.
I will say, like, I don't understand, like, Dibomb. I mean, they're one of the top companies out there. You can't say they're not. Like, all the outfitters are using their stuff. I mean, if you look at the top two decoy brands right now, it's probably Dibomb and Tangle Free, hands down. It'd be hard to argue that those two aren't probably the top two use, with their skinny decoys being as good as they are. And they've both got, well, I mean, Tangle Free's got really good full body decoys. But I do not understand why Dibomb, being the first to the like front of the line to really bring back the skinny life, the silhouette decoys, to have such a shitty bag. And I mean, I say that in like all respect, that like their bags are shitty. Like, I mean, I know guys who are buying tangle-free bags to put their Dibombs in because the Dibomb bags are breaking. I mean, they're just...
Yeah, that's not the first time I've heard that.
I mean, I don't get it.
I mean, the resurgence of the skinnies is awesome. Because for me, there comes a point when they don't work.
Yes.
You know, and I think I look at it like this. You know, ducks get overexposed to mojos and spinners in a big way, and there just comes a point they don't work anymore. They actually cause damage. And it's the same thing with running skinnies. What's nice about skinnies is if, you know, you got to do that death march out of the field, I mean, you can, you know, flip a bag over your shoulder and carry five dozen out along with your blind. And if you got three or four guys with you, I mean, you got a heck of a spread out there.
Yeah.
So,
and that's the one thing
that's your advantage is it's that middle of nowhere type hunt where those birds let their guard down. You know, they're used to seeing those geese out there. They're used to seeing ducks out there, and oh, there they are. So, but it comes a point when you start hunting the migrators that have been hunted, so where it gets a little bit tougher to really work them in.
And I think that's why you see, if you like, I'm a big component to watching what people do and then fixing what I did wrong. You can adjust your thing, and I'll show that in a second, which... Where I've like learned that this year is, I think that's why I've started buying the socks is I've realized that the skinnies are great, but the socks can add so much three dimensional like a full body that it's something completely different and something that a lot of guys are not using in my area.
No.
And it's a lot of guys don't use. They don't use socks. They'll either go full bodies or skinnies. They're not going to go socks. They feel like they're useless. They don't work.
I'm not arguing with you. They get looked down upon. And there's a great company out there called Deadly Decoys that has built an empire off of socks. And they have just an entire arsenal of decoys based off of socks. They've got one of the best flapper decoys I've ever seen. I run a couple in my rig, but it's, and you can actually put them on the windsock stands for stogies. But it's all based off of motion. But you put six mallards on this stand, and they're not spinning wings, but they actually have a subtle flapping motion when the wind catches them.
Yeah.
So it has excellent movement to your blind or to your spread, and the whole thing might weigh 10 pounds.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Socks don't weigh that much.
No,
they don't make, they might weigh less than skinnies, to be honest. You can actually fit, based off Dabomb's website, which is basically, if you buy, this works for any skinny bag. This works for any, all skinny bags are 5 dozen a bag. Well, what for yeah. 5 dozen skinnies you can fit in there, you can fit 10 dozen socks.
Yeah.
So you're taking now five, let's say 5 guys walking out on the field. That's 25 dozen. You just took that 25 dozen to 50 dozen. Walking, I mean, you're walking into a field of 50 dozen decoys. You can make some major things happen with 50 yeah. dozen. I mean, and that's just something that, I mean, it's a little trick I have up my sleeve right now is with the duck socks. I haven't seen anyone around here buy them. I don't know anyone that does have them. I know guys that run socks and none of them have them. And we don't have the geese right now. And I think that's the other day, it seemed like the ducks didn't really want to work around the geese. They kind of was like, well, why are the geese here? Like you know what I mean? Like they were kind of like, they were like, oh, why is the geese here? It was a warmer day. So like they were, it was cloudy, overcast with some rain, and we killed some birds. We could have killed more birds, but we tried to work, you know, the full groups down into us, the 7 or 8 that stayed in the air and not take the 2s and 3s and the decoys when, you know, with a 2 mallard limit, we could have took 2s and 3s and been out of there. But
I mean, those are decisions you got to make. Whoever's your pit boss, you know, they got to be the one to make those calls.
Well, I mean,
so we did that early on.
And I mean, the whole entire blind agreed. Like, here's the thing. The first group we worked after the first, like this was towards the end of my run. There, the beginning of late season. And I looked at the guy beside me after the first group. I was like, I'm good. He goes, what? And I was like, dude, I'm good. Like, I mean, we just worked a solid, we had 4 birds in the decoys, let them go. I was like, I'm good. We killed 4 birds. He goes, what do you mean? I was like, dude, all them birds and decoys are dead. I said, like, you can't tell me the 4 of us came up and cleaned the house at 5 yards. I was like, they're done. I was like, but we worked them to a T. And it was weird, and we'll kind of get on that next week. I'd like to make that next week is running traffic and running traffic with A-frames and running hedgerows and stuff. I don't want to get into that tonight, so that's something to think about going into your next couple weeks, how you approach that. I think that's a very interesting topic. It's something that a lot of people do is run hedgerows with A-frames, and you got to think of how it affects the birds.
Right, fair enough. I got some great thoughts on it. We just ran traffic on, just trying to think of the day, Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, it's very... I love running traffic. There's a lot of people who don't like running traffic. I will run traffic. To be honest, I've tried to run traffic every single day, and it's paid off and not paid off. I like running traffic because it kind of gives you that when you get birds to work, man, they work, and it's pretty awesome. And then some days they just ignore you, which sucks. But that's running traffic.
Yeah, I mean, that's dancing with the devil right there. So, but if that's the only option you got, you know, and I'll just leave this out there. Sometimes volume is what's best, and that's where your tip on using some socks, could really pay off. Because it's hard to ignore if you've got, you know, 50 dozen stinking birds sitting out in the field.
Oh yeah, it's very hard. Well, let's be honest. So what is it? I think it's one skin, like you can count like one bird per 3 skinnies or something. So for a dozen, you have 4 decoys. Basically look at it that mm-hmm. way. I think that's the rough math on it. But with socks, no matter what they have, they might lose the head, but there's still a body there moving. And that's the thing, man. Those things.
If you get a little wind, that's even better. If you got too much wind, that will bite you in the butt though.
I here's the thing. We ran the socks in the negative 25 degree weather just because we thought, let's throw everything at them. They're fresh birds. And we're going to jump into that day a little more in a second. And they, like, I mean, gust of 30, I was impressed that I didn't lose socks blown across the field. I was slightly impressed. I mean, I would assume they were going to be gone. They did kind of like spin a little bit. Like, I didn't like them to spin because the gust would kind of like change the directions really, really bad. But it's still movement. But that day, the negative 25 day, something that I learned that day and something I think everyone can take from that was the panic that the birds hit for us for the immediate weather change. We had new birds show up. We had birds that were here that now hit a panic. I mean, it was our opening day. So you didn't really have, I'd just gotten back from the hospital. So I really didn't get time to scout. I don't know. No one had really scouted or done anything. But like, we saw birds either go to big water or they check creeks. They were in a panic to find water. Well, so I assume you know who Heartland Waterfowl is and stuff. They posted their YouTube series, and they had the same storm, same day that everyone got the same storm, and the blizzard hit everyone across the country. And I think they were like in the Midwest somewhere. And all they found was a little tiny creek that had some flowing open water, and it became deadly because birds were in a panic trying to, like, they knew that creek had flowing water in it, and they were just trying to get in there. And the whole entire time they're in there, the water's freezing more and more and more. But the birds were dying to get in there because they knew they could get the water open and keep it open. And that was something I think I learned a lot, is when the drastic weather changes like that, if it's not a slow change, you can get in skinny, small water and make a big play. I don't know what your input on that is, but that's how I seen it.
I love hunting fronts. So especially when you're going to have dramatic weather changes within a day or two, and you're 100% right. It does push birds, to find that water, but it also pushes them to hide as well too. Because once they find it, they're going to hang out on it because that water is key. So the water is actually more important than feeding. I learned this a long time ago from a good buddy named Rick Baker, who was in good with Butch. But we had a nasty cold spell come in, and it was just windier than windy outside. You know, and for all intents and purposes, birds should have been moving. But the only thing that was really, different than any other cold front was we had like 50, 60 mile an hour winds. I'm touching base with him on the scout, and he hits me with here's the thing. He's like, where was the feed? I'm like, man, it was in this field. So it just, once that weather hit, that was it. It just kind of shut down and you're just sitting on water. And he just goes, it's the wind. So he's just like, the first thing you're going to do is you're going to find water. And he goes, what's around that water? They don't need to leave until that third day. That third day, no matter what, they have to leave. So, and that's something I've always held in. And, we went and hunted that on the third day, and we absolutely annihilated them. The day before, there wasn't a single bird in that field. The day before that, there wasn't a single bird in the field. The day before that is when we found them and said, all right, we're going to hunt them the next day. So I'm a firm believer in hunting those fronts, because them birds will get on the front of them or they'll get on the tail end of them and move. So, and if you could find, that water, even if you're running traffic, you know where the roost is at, it's going to freeze. These birds are going to panic. They're going to be moving all over the place and get active. Absolutely. Get yourself in a position so you can't sit them or you can't shoot them sitting at home. You can't. Guys give me grief because I keep diaries and stuff, and I'll write down barometric pressure. I'll write down what was the temperature, where was the wind coming from, what was, the miles per hour on the wind. Were we hunting water? Were we hunting a field? Were we hunting a flooded field? Were we hunting a pond, a ditch, whatever it was? So, you know, but what I have is nothing but experience coming from that. If I get frustrated about something or about seeing something, I'll look back and try to remember some of these hunts. So, and it saves me time.
Yeah, I've actually went to electronic version of that. There's an app now that some guys created from the Midwest that I use now to track. It, like, I can GPS my points. I can do locations. I can do weather. I can put a big note section in. You can do decoys. You can do all kinds of stuff in it. It's pretty impressive. It's, I always try to do the journal, but the problem is I would never write it down. I would start about four hunts, and then I just quit. Well, with this app, like, you know, you're sitting there while you're out hunting. I just go ahead and create the hunt. And then I go back in later that evening, and I finish all my notes.
Yeah. Whatever way you decide to do it, because you're going to be surprised. So, and it's sometimes those subtle little things. You know, we always, a lot of guys subscribe to, if it's sunny, hunt the water. If it's, you know, rainy, hunt the fields. So what do you do on overcast days? You don't have the weather forcing birds to go hit the fields, and yet you don't have the sun. So it's those little things like that, you know, where you start paying attention to, if it's over 40 degrees, I'm sitting on water. So if it's under, or I'm hunting a field in the evening. So, or if it's under 40 degrees, I'm going to hit a field in the morning and then try to hit a loaf pond. So it's those little things that, you know, it helps you become more successful. You know, and let's ask that question. What's the measure of success?
Oh, I don't even want to, like, that app has a percentage. And I don't even want to look at it right now because it's pretty bad. I mean, I would say it varies, but let's be honest. Everybody goes through the stretch where they don't kill. Or they can't figure it out, or they just get frustrated. And like,
well, see, if anyone says they know everything there is to know about duck and goose hunting, they're filthy liars.
No,
and that's the absolute truth. And that's why I love doing what I do. You know, Harrisburg, I had a great conversation with a guy. So he was goose heavy, but he was super lean on ducks. You know, and you know, we're talking duck season and stuff. And the guy had killed four ducks all year. It wasn't a lack of trying. It wasn't out of a lack of adapting. It wasn't out of a lack. He was just thin. So, and he was never where the birds wanted to be. And it was constant follies and screw-ups. And so, and the guy was an accomplished hunter. I mean, I think for the season, he had close to 140 geese.
Yeah.
So, you're shooting that many geese, you know what you're, I mean, that's his personal total. You know, a lot of guys count what the group has done, but, you know, look at your individuals. I mean, for me, I start off with, I just want to take one duck. I take one duck, I'm a happy camper. Because I can do a million and one things cooking that duck. I really can. So when I was younger, yeah, I was all about having that stacked picture. So, but then there's, you know, there's guys that, you know, used to fake their pictures. So, I mean, for me, it's just what's the measure of success. And as I get older and more mature and I get smarter in my hunting, it's about that quality time I'm spending with friends. It's about enjoying the views that the good Lord has given us. It's about sunrises and sunsets and being able to see the things that most people, you know, follow someone on social media, you know, instead of going and experience it for themselves.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the take for me. You know, I love the idea that, you know, it's funny because, you know, for a while, skinnies were a no-no. It was all about the full body and so on. And all of a sudden, skinnies are coming back. And there's a need for skinnies, man. Weather patterns are changing. So I can kind of one hand it over times I've dragged a truck and a trailer out into the field the last 5 years.
And also on top of that, which
It doesn't stop me from having 20 dozen skinnies sitting inside that trailer.
Yep. And another thing.
I went from almost 200 full bodies down to 120.
Yeah. And another thing on top of that is with the weather changes, the farming practices have changed. I mean, when was the last time you seen somebody till a field? If they till a field and you're driving it, no big deal. But if it's a no-till field, which is 95% of the fields anymore, you don't drive in those if they're wet. I mean, that's a big no-no down here. guys screw it up all the time and get everyone kicked out of the spots, but there's nothing you can do about one idiot. But I mean, that's changed. So you're no longer being able to drag a full trailer out in the field and set up. You're no longer, it's just changed. It's changed a lot. And I think it's changed in the last 4 years, 5 years.
Yeah. I mean, it's market prices, how it's affecting landowners. It's the weather we're seeing in the spring versus what we're seeing in the fall. We're seeing a lot of corn in fields this year. We're not seeing a lot of corn fields, but I'm seeing more spillage and more waste than I've ever seen before, you know, and it doesn't matter what kind of combine they're running, whether it's, whether they're running a stinking cleaner, you know, with a 6-row head, or they're running a John Deere with a 12-row head. It's one of my landowners explained to me was because of our super wet spring, they couldn't get seed in the ground. So, and what happened was it took them longer to get the seed in the ground. And once they got it in the ground, because of the weather patterns we had over the summer, the stock grew, the ear did not. And what we had was a lot of immature corn. So it wasn't getting caught in the head. So it was actually hitting the ground. So, but they said this was probably one of the worst waste years we've had, at least in Ohio. So, and when you start looking at grain prices and the cost, so, you know, fields that we were counting on being corn this year are beans, because the bean prices are a little bit healthier right now. So I think probably the biggest issue we have is development. So we got more and more guys getting pushed on top of each other. So more and more crews butting heads with each other right now. And a lot of it has to do with development. So I passed I had a field I had permission in for 20 plus years. And the guy ended up having to sell his property because Amazon made him an offer he couldn't refuse. So, and his kids didn't want to take it on anymore just because they didn't see being able to have the life their parents had. They were going to go into a massive amount of debt just trying to update everything. So, you know, it was one of those family decisions where they decided we're just going to go. And I passed there. I mean, the property sold 6 months ago. I passed there and Amazon's almost done with that building. That would be our third Amazon building in this area. So DHL is putting in a giant one as well, too. So for us, it's not just the farming practices that have changed and the weather patterns. It's also the amount of development we have. I think Ohio's the number two state in the country right now for growth.
Yeah, I think we're.
So it's one of these frustrating things.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of factories come into the state now down here in West Virginia, and it's.
I'm shocked we don't see more down there just with the tax structure you guys have.
Yeah, I'm a little shocked that, I mean.
You guys are a great state to do business in.
Yeah, and I mean, we got one still place coming in. We have another one that's bought up two or three farms. And the question becomes, like, you know, every time they buy this up, there's a farmer that's leasing that loses a little bit of land. Well, how much land did he need to just break even? Like, where is he at? Like, I know there's a piece of property that a guy from Texas has bought. I know there's a steel plant. I know there's another company involving a steel plant that's going in. We have a horticulturist tomato place that went in, which it's not finished. I mean, there's just so much coming in that's, you know, taking up land that it's taking money away from farmers. And my question is, you know, where are we going to be? I don't know.
It's a scary proposition.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, just to think about it.
Because, I mean, you know,
if you told me 20 years ago I'd be going through some of the things we're going through right now, it's insane. You know, and every year I broach this conversation with a lot of the guys on our crew, like, man, we just need to start leasing more ground. you know, and a lot of guys were, you know, local guys, you know, grew up on farms, you know, like, oh, well, that's kind of insulting to some guys. We don't want to do that. And now it's like, it's almost like it's our only option.
There's a reason why deer lease are as good as they are and as many as they are. I'll just say that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I lost one of my favorite pieces of property to a $15,000 a year deer lease.
Yeah. I mean, deer hunters have been on the front end of leasing ground and understanding that if they don't lease ground, they're not going to have anywhere to hunt. I mean, it's a big, it's bigger in this state than what a lot of people don't realize how big it is. Because we have a, what I like to call is, if you want to shoot deer, come to this state, because we're very liberal in our deer numbers versus other states. But we still have a good amount of like big buck leases going on in the state.
Yeah.
But okay, so the go ahead.
Take control of this conversation. We're all over the place.
Yeah, I know we are. We've been going here for about an hour. So to wrap this one up, I was going to ask you to break down the wood duck call that KES has.
Break it down.
Yeah, break it down. Like, you know, why it exists, and you know, kind of, you know, like, was it just a luck of one or something you wanted to try? Was it just something, you know, I don't know. I'm a big fan of it. I've heard some others that I kind of like, but I come back to the KES one all the time, and I've got some other people hooked on it as well.
I think the real reason behind it was because our motto is we make calls for hunters. You know, and if you travel throughout the country, there's guys that in certain areas, they chase certain types of ducks. And there's a huge group of guys that love chasing wood ducks. So, and for us, we just felt like there wasn't, you know, there was always that wood duck call you'd use for a year or two. And then you'd have to try to find a new one. And it just wasn't right. So for us, we wanted to create something that we put our name on. So we actually came up with three or four prototypes, brought in some guys that they religiously just hunt the wood duck. And they just give me an idea, they hunt wood ducks into January. So, and we had a couple different prototypes, a couple different reed sets on them. So we worked with guys that were just certified wood duck junkies just to really kind of take us through, you know, what the wood duck hunter was looking for. So, and at the time, it was the only acrylic wood duck call. And it was the only acrylic wood duck call running a lifetime warranty. So, and, you know, what I love about the reed set as well, too, is if you put a lot of air into a call, I can adjust that reed set. So, and that was a giant pain in the butt for us to develop. It's easy to take apart as well, too. So I always tell guys, if you're going to take apart anything with a reed set and a tone board and a tone channel in it like that, what you're going to want to do is mark it. Just mark it with a marker. Let's say you take it apart, you can clean it out, you actually put it back together, and it achieves exactly where it needs to be. And what another thing I really like, too, is she'll run the entire gamut. So, you know, for your assembly call, all the way to your feed calls, to your lone hen call. So, and just in researching these and putting the darn thing together, I learned an awful lot about the different types of calls that a wood duck makes. So, and I'm proud to say that we have a wood duck call that will hit that entire range. So, and once again, it's full lifetime warranty on the darn thing. And I sell out of them. I'll walk in Harrisburg this year with 50 of them, and I'll sell out probably by Tuesday.
Yeah, so, it's a real great call. Actually, I don't have one currently because I've sent mine to guys in Arkansas, and they're liking it. It's definitely something they're like, we've never seen. It's definitely something a lot different to them, because I think that's something that, like, a lot of times, like, with kind of like helping KS get their names out there, is, you know, you do 90 some percent of your sales, 95% of your sales at Harrisburg.
Yes and no. That's for shows. Yeah. that show's just enormous for us. So, and then with the new job and then just kind of being the one man operation, we pick and choose the shows that we go to. So, but as far as like doing actual retail shows like that, yeah, I would say probably about 80% will come from that. So, this summer I'll actually have a little bit more time. So there's a couple other shows I want to get back into doing that we always did really well. So we did get an invite back to Southern Illinois. So we're going to make a trip out there. I've had guys blowing me up about making it out to Easton again, cause it's been a while since we've been out there. So, but it's managing my time. It's getting our inventory up. So, my first rule of thumb is always take care of our retailers. And then if we have any internet orders, you know, it's get those guys taken care of as quick as we can. So acrylic's starting to bounce back, which is good. I got a nice stockpile of acrylic. Even, you know, finding real good quality Osage orange as well too. That's been a little bit easier trying to find stuff, but it's the goofy stuff that's becoming difficult. But a lot of us call guys will actually trade stuff back and forth to help each other out.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm a big fan. I'm excited to get my next one. And, you know, I mean, right now we don't have it. I haven't seen any wood ducks for a while since we had a negative 25 degree day. I think that's the first time in January I haven't seen wood ducks. But
yeah, believe it or not, I actually we were colder than you. And once that weather broke, we were actually hunting a field. This will go into a running traffic. So, but yeah, we actually had a pair of wood ducks come over top of us. So give us a pretty serious look as well too. So that was interesting. And honestly, if I was just by myself, I probably would have taken a poke at them.
I love shooting wood ducks.
So
they're fun. If you ever get a chance, you got to do it.
Well, the funny part is that conversation actually came up. We were talking about that. You know, and it's funny because we shoot a majority of our wood ducks, you know, on creeks or small potholes. And I was pointing out to the guys that, you know, my buddies down in West Virginia, they kill a majority of theirs in, you know, in fields. And they were just kind of shocked by that. It's like, I don't know what shocks you about it. Birds got to eat.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's pretty fun. But
I think so. Now, with that being said, what's your gun of choice if you're chasing wood ducks? Use it a 20 gauge, use it a 12.
Well, I've shot them this year with a 28 and a 12. And
there you go.
I've decided that to shut up some people, I'm running the 28 till I'm out of shells. And I've got about 90, so I don't think I'm going to run out. I don't know. I probably got less than 90. Probably got about 80. I mean, I hope I run out.
One of the best shooters in the planet. I had an opportunity to learn some stuff from this guy, and he taught me some really cool tricks about past shooting snow geese up in Canada off the quills. And he had, needless to say, he's well past his prime, but he's still a hell of a shooter. At one point, he was number one in the world for about 10 years. So, and he has fired easily probably 10 million rounds in his life. And unfortunately, it took a toll on his shoulder. So he had shoulder surgery and he was going to Canada. From hell or high water, he was going, and he kept working with his doctors, doing his physical therapy, and just, you know, trying to heal as quick as he could. And he went out and got himself a 28 gauge and picked up a couple cases of Boss and went up to Canada. And the reports I got from the buddies were if it was within 50 yards, it was dead.
Yep.
I mean, I want you to think about that. 28 gauge, if it was within 50 yards, it was stoned.
Here.
So, and they had a couple burner snow goose hunts. I think their best snow goose total for the trip was 400 snow geese.
Yeah, I mean, here's what I've learned about the 28. And it's not a 12. Okay, it's a 28. And this was stupidity on my part, which is why I've got to shut people up now, is for some stupid reason I had a goose that was walking away from me, and I left the dog in the truck. This was at the place I call the zoo. It's like hunting at a zoo. Like, it's the people want rid of the geese. It's a.
So are we talking like wildebeest and giraffes and zebras stuff, or
no? It has normal farm animals on it, but like just by the fact of like how predictable the birds are when they come there, it's one of those.
Okay.
But I let the other guys shoot the birds, and then I was like, well, I'll just clean up when they're like on the ground. I made the stupid decision, and I tried to body shoot a goose that was kind of walking away from me when my dog just could have tackled it, but she was in the truck, and I just left her in the truck. And, you know, you body shoot a goose in the back with a 12, it might even knock it down, to be honest. So that was my stupidity part, and then I had three people watch me do that, and now they give the 28 complete shit and say that a goose laughed at it. Granted, right before that, at 30 yards, I jellyhead one that was setting up looking at me like, what do you got? So, lesson learned, but I'm going to shut some people up about it. I've shot some wood ducks with it, and it crumples wood ducks pretty good. So, I mean.
I got a funny one. It was with a 12 gauge, but yeah, I ended up missing. We went and hunted a spiltway. It's a secret little hole we have, but man, when it gets cold and it's sunny out, that thing fills up like it's nobody's business. So, and, yeah, it was, we had, three birds come in and they came in beautifully. So they were probably at about 15 yards. And I'm like, you ready? And I looked at my, you know, looked right at my buddy. I'm like, you ready? He's like, yeah. We jump up and I literally whiffed. Just whiffed. So, and it was just nonstop abuse. And now it's like, all right, man, hey, you know, I made some great shots and we have that. So, and, yeah, the next hunt we went out was the next day. And of course that was the conversation. So, you know, I can't believe Chris missed these two, you know, two ducks at 10 yards, blah, blah, blah. Just everyone give me, and it happens to everyone. So, and, so here it was, we had a group of geese come in, and we beat them up pretty good. I think it was eight geese, and we had one getting out pretty quick. And I wasn't even paying attention. One of my buddies was like, man, get that last bird. And it's one of those I whip around. I got one shell in the gun, and I about cut this thing in half. We paced it off at 66 yards. So that was my shut-up moment for everyone. They literally didn't say a word to me after that about whiffing on two ducks at about 10 feet. So
here's the thing, you get birds in tight and you really, and like, especially if you get birds to backpedal, I've got a real bad habit of it. A, rushing my shot because I'm like, oh, they're going to get out. When in reality, it takes them forever to actually get out if you slow it down and take your time. And it's when they get that backpedal, you want to lead because you want to get out in front of them. When in reality, they're just literally backpedaling and kind of going up. You could just settle your beat on them and it's done and over.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we've all done that. I've done it once this year. And the boy beside me, yeah, like, we both missed. And I looked at him. I was like, I tried to lead that bird. He's like, I did too. I was like, yeah, that was stupid on both of our parts.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was, you know, I missed that first initial shot, which is like, you know, and in my head, I'm like, okay. And then, yeah, then I just started rushing. When I should have just slowed down.
Yeah.
So you just hit the nail on the head. But I mean, that just, it happens to everyone. Yeah. We're going to miss. So, but your retribution, you know, I'm all for it, man. Give them hell too. You know, just be a cocky jerk about it too. You know, make them own it. And then point out that, you know, these guys, you know, I know some of the guys you hunt with. So, and I've seen those guys walk out for a teal hunt, you know, running 3.5 inch to BBs. So, and I'm the lone guy in the group with a 20 gauge shooting number six shot, you know?
Yeah.
So I am all for you giving them a bunch of crap and static.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. But I think this is a great place to wrap it up.
Absolutely, brother.
We'll be back in 2 weeks. We're trying to do an episode every other week. I think I now have my life back under control. Hopefully it stays there with everything going on. But
Well, you know, we did miss a week. You want to try doing something next week?
We will see what's going
on. I might have the new boat by then.
We'll see. We'll see.
All right.
We will see. We'll see how my schedule goes. Man, it's been a lot of fun. And as always, everybody check out KS Waterfowls, Winter Productions, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, websites. We both have websites. Check us out.
Yes.
We'll catch y'all next time.